They take the biggest stories of the day, cut through the nonsense, and say the quiet part out loud.
The rebuilding process is already well underway in Iran.
Yeah.
I don't know. Everybody's looking for an exit strategy right now, though. I don't know what's going on. All I know is somebody has had it with Arabic music.
That was a good transition, man.
Had it.
MVR, weekdays 11 till 2 on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, AM 1620. Informative, local, dependable.
Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Tell an incredible story. 83% of our school maintained or improved their performance. We now have 19 A schools and 16 B schools, and for the first time, not a single school earned a D or an F.
Yeah, these are big things to be proud about. We've talked about this before. Escambia County schools doing very, very well this past year. Cindy Brown with the Florida Education Association. That's the Florida branch of the NEA, the National Education Association, the union, representing teachers. And, yeah, of course, she wants to emphasize, I'm sure, that the teachers have done a good job, students, administrators, collectively. It's been a lot better. The why is a little bit more complicated to see, but I think, you know, accolades all around for, generally speaking, of an improvement, right? That's true. Celebrate stuff when they go well. They have not always gone well, so celebrate that.
Our students also posted impressive academic gains. Mathematics achievements increased faster than the state average. Our middle school algebra pass rate now exceeds the state average for the first time. And our middle school acceleration rate climbed to 89%, remaining among the highest in Florida.
Again, big celebration. That's good. But she's not there primarily to talk about that. That's just set up for saying, hey, look, now that you've got all these good teachers doing good work, can we not get some basic labor things improved in our next contract?
For months, our teachers have been asking for stronger contract language that protects something as basic as duty-free lunch. They aren't asking for special treatment. They're asking for uninterrupted personal time so they can decompress, use the restroom, and eat their lunch. This will allow them to return to their students refreshed and ready to teach.
Teachers don't get potty breaks? I mean, I know logistically, like if you're in the middle of a class, but, you know, they don't have a chance to, they don't get to eat on their, now, I was surprised when I heard this, and so I asked when I had two former teachers in studio with me on Friday for the wrap. I had Kim Klein from Santa Rosa and Jewel Canada Wynn from Escambia, and they're like, yeah. I'm like, what? What? Well, Jewel said, I think Kim was kind of surprised by it, but, you know, but Santa Rosa is different. Okay, this is Escambia County. And if this is wrong, if there's any part of this that's inaccurate, because I did when I was covering this in the 5 o'clock hour, I had somebody text in and say, well, you know, there's this and this and this about duty-free lunch. So the union representative isn't saying it 100% right. Okay, well, correct me if I'm wrong. I do want to know the facts. But is this basically correct that teachers don't get an uninterrupted lunch break? Just as an employment matter. I mean, it may not be an OSHA violation, but it's not good. Like, if you put somebody to work for 7 hours, they should get a lunch break. They should get a bathroom break. Maybe, and I know this is going to sound like ridiculous liberalism, but maybe two bathroom breaks. I mean, my goodness. These seem like very basic things. I would understand why they'd think, you know, well, hey, nobody else in the state of Florida does it this way. Why do we do it this way? Now, I understand logistically managing classrooms and obligations and duties, and, you know, the district is already under great financial duress because of, I'm going to regret saying it this way, its inability to retain its customer base. tell me I'm wrong. And other things. But look, you cannot keep the teachers if the teachers are miserable. We'll get to that in just a second. But they are also asking for bereavement leave. And this is one that to me is a little bit more complicated, if only because I don't believe you should pay people for work that isn't being done unless it was negotiated into their contract that they get so many days. And then I don't think the reason you're not there doing the work, it matters. If you're at home because you wanted to play video games that day and you're home because you caught the flu, well, either way, you're home. The work isn't being done. I support either decision, but I don't know why we treat them differently. I've always been of the opinion that all paid time should be paid time. You know, it just, you get it, you take it, use it for however you want it. I don't think that the sick person should have to, you know, subsidize the healthy person or vice versa. Just take your time off. Because if the work isn't being done, the real issue is that the work isn't being done and we have to have a sub in to replace your work. You shouldn't be paid for the work not being done unless we're going to say in advance, okay, you get 10 days a year or whatever the number is. I don't really need to know whether it's because you're sleeping in that day or whether you lost a relative. Either way, you know, you're not working and that's fine. So I'm not in support of them as much on this one. I am definitely in support of the duty-free lunch part. So you had several other people show up and, you know, want to argue about this. A guy named Harper Cummings, who grew up here, has five kids in the district, says it's ridiculous that they don't have, duty-free lunch. Another guy named Michael O'Connor, who's from elsewhere, said the same thing. This is Harper Cummings.
Hello, my name is Harper Cummings. I attended Escambia County Schools myself. I have five kids in Escambia County Schools. I came here to speak in support of the teachers' union and their demand for a fair contract. I was shocked, honestly, as well, to learn that our teachers don't have duty-free lunches. I was shocked to learn that they have to have spent up their sick leave before they can use bereavement. It's simply not good enough, and I think that everyone in this room understands that it's not good enough and that there's no reason this body should do anything other than fully support those demands.
Yeah, that's one, again, the bereavement leave, we can talk about that. That's a little bit more complicated. But I think we have a larger problem because I understand that, you know, when there's contracts, you know, union people show up and they talk. And by the way, just as a note, historically, you do not typically find me on the side of most unions. I think that unions wind up, increasing cost and decreasing quality because that's what monopolies do. And a labor union is essentially a labor monopoly. That's what it's trying to be. Now, I know in Florida with open shop rules, they may not be able to be successful at that. But the idea of a union is, we want to control the supply of labor so that you have to buy from us or else. And anytime there's a monopoly on a product, you get what? Lower quality, higher price. And that's what unions do. In fact, that's what they promise their members. You know, come with us and we'll get you better prices. We'll get you higher wages. So I'm not a fan of unions in principle. In the past, they had a great role to play in combating some of the excesses in, you know, the early 1900s. I totally agree with that. And some of the labor reforms that have now gone into place. Nowadays, I'm not so sure. If unions wanted to really be good at what they do, what they would offer is, you know, training and education and mentorship and apprenticeship, and they would really produce a superior product. And the ad could then be, come join the union, we'll make you better at your job, and that will justify the higher wage that we will negotiate on your behalf to get from the employer, who will be glad to pay for our certified union high-quality labor force. That's not how it works usually. The one exception to whether I side with unions typically is law enforcement, fire, you know, first responders. But typically, I'm not a big friend of the, especially the teachers' unions. But in this case, when they're right, they're right. And they're right about the duty-free lunch. We'll come back to this in a second because I think there's a broader issue about public education that is about the happiness of teachers that I think you ought to hear. PJ has traffic on the fives.
I-10 and 110 are both looking good at this hour. Cervantes is clear through the curve on Scenic Highway. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
Reading the note here, 437-1620, somebody says, we had a contest for individual grade levels for teachers to win duty-free lunch where the PTA volunteers would go in the lunchroom during that time of their lunch to relieve them so they can eat in peace. I mean, good for the PTA. I mean, that's a sweet, kind thing to do, but you shouldn't have to win the PTA lottery to have an uninterrupted lunch. That's a basic, like that's a labor entitlement, in my opinion. And again, I'm not typically the guy who's out there being the champion for teachers' unions, so you know I'm persuaded by the case. All right, there's another slice of this that I want to talk about with you, and this is going to be one of those feel free to weigh in moments if you're a teacher. There was another teacher who showed up, and she was there to kind of help with this. Her name is Wendy Evans, and I want you to hear from her. Might make you cry a little bit, but that's okay. It is my perception, having talked to not a lot of teachers, but enough, that generally speaking, teachers are very capable. They work under the worst conditions with, you know, terrible support, bad management, a lot of the case, and for low pay. That's just true. Okay? They do jobs a lot of us wouldn't want to do, and they're incredibly important in our, you know, in our society. And that's always sort of been the case, but it seems to be extra the case now. And I don't hear those same kinds of complaints from private school teachers, which makes me suspect that the private school environment is a superior work environment, which is a problem for the public schools, both in terms of output for the kids and also for keeping employees satisfied. I don't know what to do about it, but I want you to hear from Wendy, because I do not think that what Wendy Evans is saying in this commentary at the school board meeting last week is at all unique to her.
Hello, my name is Wendy Evans. I am a VE teacher at Brentwood Elementary School, and I'm very good at what I do. I am the teacher that you want to keep. Unfortunately, due to the expectations in my role, I don't know if that's possible. This isn't a job I do, but this is my calling. I love my students. I don't know if I can do this much longer. I don't want to give up on my kids, but I can't keep to the expectations that are held to me.
Now, she also was talking about other things and obligations and time constraints and paperwork and developing her own plans and all that. But this is what I hear from teachers frequently. I love teaching the kids. I hate working for the school district. That is as common as any comment that I hear from any teachers ever. Now, if you agree with that, I'd love to hear from you. If you disagree with that, I'd love to hear from you. We want to tell people the truth. But Wendy Evans continues. This is a little bit longer. This is about a minute. But I wanted you to hear it, because if we have the people who are spending 7 hours a day with our children, raising them, educating them, preparing them for the future, and they are suffering like this on a regular basis, this cannot sustain. Something needs to be done. Is that new people in office? I don't know. Is that new laws? I don't know. Is that more parental involvement? I don't know. But the status quo is not maintainable, in my opinion, based on listening to teachers say things like this.
Safety concerns. I had 2 workman's comp cases due to my students injuring me last year, and I don't get a lunch break. Because I don't get a lunch break last year, I had some dangerous weight loss that led to me getting infections, me passing out in the middle of the night. I had a panic attack walking into Walmart 10 days ago because there are school supplies. And I'm terrified that I cannot work in my passion anymore. Because my workload is too big, I need more paper days, I need a lunch break, I need more plan time. My students deserve an education just like every other student in our district, and it's a lot more work for me to deliver that. I don't have a textbook I can open. I don't have frameworks from the district. I create my own frameworks. I created my own pacing guide today. I have written my own units for my students. Please do not rest on my passion to keep me in this role.
Time is up, ma'am.
Thank you.
Please do not count on or rest on my passion to keep me in this role. Because that's what it is, you know? Teachers are frustrated, irritated, stressed, tired, exhausted, sometimes angry at administration or rules, but they love their kids. Even the difficult ones. You know, even the kids that, you know, might hurt you, like happens in VE cases, right? You know, varying exceptionality is what that stands for. That's for what you might have previously would have called special ed, or kids with, you know, individual education plans, or, you know, we use all these acronyms to work around the basic that some kids are difficult. Okay. And that's where I hear actually the most of the concerns is about dealing with the difficult or the exceptional, you know, kids, but ordinary kids too. And if this represents even some, let alone much, of the teacher workforce, I mean, that's a problem, right? And I know some, well, we just don't have money. Money is not the answer to everything. And you can run great organizations on limited resources. It's about culture. It's about who leads. It's about how you treat people. It's 1,000 things that are not the paycheck. We all know you can't just wave your wand and throw more money at teachers. But there are all kinds of things that you can do to make teaching itself not suck for teachers. And if you believe in public education, and, you know, though I also believe in private and home education and charter education, I believe in public education. Don't we owe it to our kids to give them the teachers that will be happy enough about going to school every day that they don't dread it and leave to go work at, and I'm not picking on Navy Federal, but to go work at Navy Federal instead or some other job instead when they'd rather teach if they could? 437-1620, 437-1620. I'm Andrew McKay.
Here's today's Strength for Life with your host, Pastor James C. Johnson.
Often the most unhealthy part of a person is their mind. People fantasize about life with a different spouse, or they entertain negative thoughts that often lead to depression, or some people think of themselves more highly than they ought. After all, no one knows what you're thinking unless you tell them. It's easy to keep secret the bad habits of the mind. Did you know that 2 Corinthians 10:5 tells us to bring into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ? Beware of thinking on things that inhibit your spiritual growth or undermine your relationship with others. Instead, capture your thoughts and bring every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. You'll be glad you did, and so will the people in your life.
That was James C. Johnson. He serves as the pastor of Northstone Baptist Church in Pensacola, Florida. For more Strength for Life, please visit our website, strengthforlife.church.
Summer is here, and Prim and Popper is ready. From officially licensed Blue Angels and U.S. Navy merchandise to custom engraving and branded promotional products, they do it all right here in Gulf Breeze. Shopping for yourself, buying a gift, or putting your logo on something your customers will actually keep? Go see them. Visit primandproper.com or stop by their shop in Gulf Breeze, located in the heart of Proper on the way to Pensacola Beach. Prim and Proper, officially licensed, locally loved.
This is a statement from the National Weather Service.
September 2020.
The National Hurricane Center predicted Hurricane Sally would come ashore in Mississippi.
A hurricane warning has now been issued.
But then, Sally made a right turn and surprised us by coming ashore here with a destructive power we have not seen since Hurricane Ivan, which is why you should keep your radio on News Radio 92.3 for all the latest watches, warnings, and full team coverage should the storm make that unexpected change of course. News Radio 92.3.
Keeping you connected to Pensacola and the world.
News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
I'm dead?
Nah, I'm just messing with you.
That's not funny, man. That is not funny.
This is one of the other artists I discovered from that Ride or Die show. Betta Lemme, B-E-T-T-A-L-E-M-M-E, like Betta Lemme, do a thing. She's a French artist, I think. Mostly sings in French, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, all kinds of songs that she's made that are fantastic. I love finding new music. Let's see. PJ has traffic on the fives. PJ?
There is a hit-run crash I-10 eastbound right near Beulah Road. Use caution through that area. Also, a vehicle crash US 98 at Skylark Road near Mary Esther. Use caution. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks, PJ. Somebody texts in 437-1620. One of the reasons I no longer teach is lack of disciplinary support from admin. From the frequent flyers to the dean, they get referred off and return with little or no consequences. The reason I assume is that if little Johnny gets expelled, the district loses that money from the state. This snowballs into less time helping the kids that do care when I have to spend more time being a babysitter. I've heard that quite a bit. Somebody says, I worked for Florida Department of Corrections for 7 years, never got a duty-free lunch, but it is such an energy drain to not get those duty-free lunches. Teachers should 100% get a lunch where they don't have to deal with all the brat kids. Somebody else says, teachers get hammered on by entitled kids with overbearing parents. They need their breaks. 437-1620, 437-1620. If you are thinking about buying a vacation rental or a long-term rental or a beach house, a second home, or your first home, you know, you're living in an apartment renting or renting a home and you want to buy a home, you're starting a family. Hey, I remember the first time we bought a home. I wish I could go back in history and have somebody like Christina Leavenworth holding our hand and taking us through that process, because she and her folks at Levinrinke Realty are just great at this. They sold 206 homes last year. They help people buy homes all the time. And what you want is somebody with relevant, current, abundant market experience. They clearly have that. To help you navigate all of the various issues and get you all the way through to closing and make you feel like, ah, I'm going to spend $400,000. It's going to be a good investment, or three, or whatever you're going to spend, or a million, you know, whatever the case may be. Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty, 786-3996. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, a sanctions bill sponsored by Republican Senator Lindsey Graham receiving bipartisan support. The bill would double the amount of tariffs on countries that continue buying Russian oil and gas and also renew sanctions on Iran. That vote came shortly after Senator Graham's funeral yesterday. Final passage in the Senate is expected this week. Pope Leo's holding a concert for peace. That's being held today at the Pope's summer residence outside of Rome.
What's he playing? What instrument?
Well, I don't believe he's playing an instrument,
per se. I mean, well, he's a producer then.
I guess you could say that. Yeah. Maybe a promoter.
All right, go on. I think harpsichord. He's going to be on the harpsichord is what I heard.
Oh, that could be. Opera star Andrea Bocelli will be there and a choir of 200 children. And that's also going to be on NBC if you want to watch that, Andrew. And a Florida lottery player waking up to an $800 million fortune after hitting the Mega Millions jackpot yesterday. Lottery officials say a winning ticket matched all six numbers, and that now resets. It wasn't me.
I was going to say, I see you're still here. So
still here,
obviously not you. What was that amount again, though?
$800 million.
No.
$800 million.
Thank you.
There you go.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Anytime.
All right, David. Thanks so much for the update. All right, coming up next, we're going to have a chance to learn about things going on in the city. Cliff Collins is the associate Pensacola City Administrator. We'll talk to him about some of the projects he's overseeing. Coming up next after local news.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. The only witness in front of the Senate Homeland Security Committee this morning is former COVID czar Dr. Anthony Fauci.
He's going to be asked questions about his diaries, the start of the pandemic, what started it, did it come from the lab, did it come from a bat? And also, if you look at some of these diary entries, whether or not he was more focused on trying to get attention for himself compared to trying to address the pandemic, that's something that the Republican senators will certainly focus on.
Fox's Chad Pergram, the fragile pause is over. CENTCOM says
Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps forces launched multiple ballistic missiles from Iran in an attempted surprise attack on U.S. forces based in the Middle East. All Iranian missiles were successfully intercepted.
Fox's Trey Yanks in Tel Aviv. America is listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 7:31. We've got 82 degrees right now with cloudy skies. We'll get a full check on our forecast from Channel 3. That's up in just a few minutes. A 47-year-old Pace woman is headed to prison for stealing more than $1.3 million from her former employer. Jessica McKinnon pleaded guilty this week to grand theft and was sentenced to 12 years. She's also been ordered to pay back nearly $1.2 million to Paul Patrick Electric. Deputies say McKinnon shifted the stolen funds between accounts over several years to hide the theft while working as the company's bookkeeper. A J-man has been sentenced to the maximum 5 years in prison for torturing his ex-girlfriend's kitten to death. Gunnar Bush was convicted by a jury in June for aggravated animal cruelty. Investigators say two other cats also went missing from that home before their remains were found nearby. A tool used in the killing was found in Bush's truck. The University of Florida's Veterinary College assisted with DNA analysis in that case. The company now handling Escambia County's ADA paratransit service says it did everything required to prepare for the transition, despite some complaints from riders. Terrence Nelson, operations manager with ITL Cares, told commissioners his company sent out transition information well in advance.
We sent an email on May 21st with our transition plan. On that transition plan, there were a couple of deadlines on there for important information that we needed to make sure that it was a seamless transition. We offered an in-person meeting as well for that.
Nelson said that the state selected ITL Cares as the new transportation provider for residents who qualify as transit disadvantaged. County Administrator Wes Moreno last week said that the county is doing their best to communicate with riders to make that transition a better experience. Now, Cordova Mall saw a heavy police presence yesterday after reports of a man with a gun. 22-year-old Theodore Jackson was arrested after reportedly fleeing into a closet at the Belk store and then fighting with officers that were trying to detain him. Ultimately, no gun was found on him or anywhere in the mall. Police say they are still looking into whether Jackson was experiencing a mental health episode at the time. An investigation continuing after a fatal go-kart crash in Okaloosa County earlier this month. Troopers are now looking for potential witnesses. A 32-year-old Crestview man died after he lost control of his go-kart and crashed head-on with a pickup truck. Troopers say they are trying to identify a light-colored SUV seen turning onto the road just before that crash. Anybody with information on that is asked to contact the Florida Highway Patrol. The Navy officially retiring the C-2 Greyhound on Tuesday, marking the end of a six-decade era. The aircraft made its final flight from Norfolk to NAS Pensacola. They were escorted by the Blue Angels and welcomed with a water salute. Squadron Commander Paul Ingram, who's flown the C-2 since 2009, called it bittersweet, but also said the retirement was done right. You can see the C-2 Greyhound on display at the National Naval Aviation Museum next year. 735 at News Radio. PJ's got our traffic on the fives.
Thank you, David. Highway 90 is clear from Milton to Pace. Avalon Boulevard is clear through the Garson Point Bridge. Just one accident on the board right now. There's a hit-and-run crash I-10 eastbound right near Beulah Road. Use caution. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
We are going to have mostly sunny skies through most of the day with just a 30% chance of a pop-up shower and thunderstorm in the afternoon. Otherwise, going to be a hot one. Temperatures near 96 degrees for your high, feeling more like the triple digits. Heat advisory and an extreme heat warning along the coastline. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 81. For Thursday, 50% chance of those showers and thunderstorms, high near 93. And Thursday night, temperatures dropping near 79. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
And right now, 82 degrees. We've got cloudy skies. Expecting another hot day. Our next news at 8. Breaking news anytime it happens. This is News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Procter & Gamble reported quarterly earnings per share that topped Wall Street estimates, but its revenue fell short of expectations. P&G also announced that its CEO, Shailesh Jejurikar, will become chair of the board effective August 1st. Elon Musk's XAI, now owned by SpaceX, has sued Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison to challenge a law that would ban so-called nudify apps in the state. That's according to CNBC. The Minnesota law targets apps and websites that give people the ability to generate non-consensual sexualized imagery. Oil prices have spiked this morning by more than 4% following renewed tensions in the Middle East after Iran launched an attack on American forces and while the U.S., along with the Saudis, struck Tehran-backed sites in Iraq. West Texas Intermediate up to $82 a barrel, Brent at $87. Futures are still mixed ahead of the Fed's interest rate decision later today. Dow futures down by more than 200 points. That's Your Money Now.
From the efficiency of American natural gas and the dependability of nuclear power, to the strength of Florida's sunshine and the flexibility of advanced battery storage systems. At FPL, we leverage a diverse mix of energy sources to power our growing state, ensuring reliable, low-cost power whenever you need it. See how at FPL.com. FPL, working for you every single day.
We need your help.
It's the Cat Country Cares for Kids Radiothon for the Studer Family Children's Hospital.
The 8th annual Cat Country Cares for Kids Radiothon is Friday, August 14th in the lobby of the Studer Family Children's Hospital, presented by Hanto and Clark. You'll hear stories of bravery and inspiration from local kids and families who've benefited from the care and expertise of the hospital's highly trained physicians and staff.
All the money stays right here.
Gulfwinds Credit Union is matching donations up to $20,000. This year, help us raise funds for the Pediatric Sedation Suite.
Thank you.
Thank you to our champion sponsors, including Florida Power and Light, and our hope sponsors, Stifel, Navy Federal Credit Union, Walmart, and Sam's Club. You can get more at catcountrycares.com or text KIDS to 850-430-1987.
Proudly supporting your kids at the Cat Country Cares for Kids Radiothon. Join Chris Roney from Ace Unlocks today at 9:30 a.m. on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Chris will be sharing his years of expertise in the field of locksmithing, talking about topics like security benefits of having your home or business locks inspected and resecured, smart locks, and even reprogramming your car's ECU computer for a lost key fob.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions.
When the news gets complicated, you need better questions.
It's just a fact that Tony Fauci, not the guy I'm talking with, but Tony Fauci, the person in people's mind, is now an impediment to public health because people won't listen to you.
You know, with all due respect, I just completely disagree with that premise because there are an awful lot of people who do listen, who do the right thing from a public health standpoint.
Hugh Hewitt. Weekdays 2 to 4 on News Radio 92.3. Informative.
Informative.
Local.
Local.
Dependable.
Dependable.
You know the day destroys the night. Night divides the day. Try to run. Try to hide. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side, yeah.
Good morning, I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News, and joining us now we have Cliff Collins. He is the Associate Pensacola City Administrator. He's one of two. Amy Miller is the other one. He is a retired 06, retired captain from the Navy, worked at the Naval Education Training Command previously, and want to let you know that this interview is brought to you by Lambert Transfer and Storage. Choose the team with a legacy. Lambert Moving Systems. Visit GoLambertTeam.com. And I believe this is Cliff's first time on the radio with me, so it's a first of. I love that, Cliff. Retired Captain Collins, welcome to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Thank you, and I appreciate this opportunity to chat with you this morning. This is, in fact, my first time being on air with you.
Oh, nice. Excellent. Okay. So I know DC is on vacation this week, so Shannon Nickinson had offered you, and I thought, that's great. Let's talk about some stuff. You oversee a lot of things, economic development, facilities, public works, child care access, and, you know, various and sundries. You know, if nobody else has it, you have it, is my impression. So one thing I want to talk about that has not been in the news a lot lately, but I know I have keep asking questions. The Chappie James Monument. I keep hearing things, but where are we at? What is the city's level of involvement? What do we know? What can you tell people?
Yeah, I think the last position I know the mayor had sort of amplified was that, you know, we were really sort of waiting on the foundation. Obviously, I think everybody's aware that the foundation was supposed to raise some money, and that money was supposed to go towards taking an F-4 aircraft, a version of the aircraft that Chappie James flew while he was on active duty, and then sort of display that in Pensacola for people to see and to recognize, you know, Chappie James' accomplishment. He's a hometown young man, and we thought that was fitting. As far as the discussions go right now, I think we're kind of at an impasse, at least from what I understand, as it relates to sort of moving forward with the foundation piece. But then, you know, we also got the other portion of that, which is the city has taken custody of the F-4 aircraft, which is currently housed at Naval Air Station Pensacola. And we take good care of that aircraft, and, you know, really just trying to figure out where do we at least maybe find a place for the aircraft if this monument does not come to fruition. I hope I answered your question.
Yeah. So, and I had heard some of the rumblings about, you know, a lot of turmoil at the foundation and, you know, board members resigning and various things. And, you know, I don't know a lot, and I wish I did. But it sounds like, so the city owns the Phantom, which is being housed at the museum, and they're taking care of it for now. But you, sure, like all the rest of us, want to see it on display somewhere. We don't want to just pay to have something at the museum. You know, there had been the discussion about the flag, about the pedestal for the aircraft, and then also the statue of Chappie James and the location, of course, which is city property. And I know there have been a lot of navigation around who's going to be responsible for what and who's going to be financially responsible for what. What I hear you saying is, now that you're kind of, you know, overseeing this part from the city's perspective, is you want to see it get done. How it gets done is a little bit up in the air, but you want to see something happen so that we can all enjoy that aircraft.
That's exactly right. And last week I had a conversation with CJ. I think his last name is Johnson. CJ runs the museum. Both him and I were just trying to figure out, you know, what's ground truth today. And then I was going to reach out to, I think it's Chris Doucette.
Doseph, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Doseph. I was going to reach out to Chris Doseph as well. And this is an effort to sort of at least understand all three parts of it. That's including the Aviation Museum and the aircraft training facility, and make sure I understand all three of those and then figure out, you know, what levers I have, what can we move, and how do we bring this thing forward? Because I'll tell you, from DC's position, he really wants to get this thing moving and make sure that we at least do what we told the people we were going to do.
Outstanding. Hey, just a technical question, because he piqued my interest. It was always my understanding that the museum is the owner of naval planes, and that the people who have them, like, for example, in the welcome centers or wherever, that they are owned by the museum and they're just there on basically loan. The way you said it is that the city has possession of the Phantom, which, of course, is an Air Force airframe originally. Who owns it? Am I misunderstanding something?
No, that's a nice distinction. So the Air Force Aviation Museum actually owns the Chappie James aircraft.
Got it.
And it's on loan to the city of Pensacola. And that requires us to basically just make sure that we maintain the aircraft.
Okay. So you're the stewards of it, and it's owned by the Air Force Museum, not the Naval, which of course makes sense. That's what I was curious about, the way you said it. Okay, perfect. Well, I'm totally with you. I want to see this thing happen. We're talking to Cliff Collins. He is the Associate Pensacola City Administrator. Cliff, hang out for just 1 second. We need to do a quick traffic break with PJ, Traffic on the Fives.
There is a brand new vehicle crash with injuries and roadblock. I-10 eastbound right near Pensacola Boulevard. Just use caution through that area. I'm PJ with your Traffic on the Fives.
Thanks so much, PJ. Back to Cliff Collins. You are also overseeing the graffiti bridge redesign, boat ramp, walk around, warning sign, all of the above, I think. Where are we at on how soon we're likely to get that actual warning system in place?
Well, actually, I can't help but chuckle when you mention the graffiti bridge because of all the things that surround it. But what I will tell you right now is and the city, we have basically executed a contract with Loftus Marine, and I think that's a great thing. The why for this, which you just alluded to, it is the issue that we keep having with crashes, and I'll get to that in a bit. But to your point and question is the construction is scheduled to begin in September, so that's less than 2 months, really, at least the way I see it. Now, when all this happens, I think what is the community to expect, right? So obviously you got the boat ramp, you got the parking area, all that's going to be secured, and we're going to basically lock that area down. And really we're going to put in a modern system, which is really a heads-up display system to alert trucks that, you know, they exceed the limit for the bridge, which it's interesting that we have to do this, but it's important because safety matters. And as you know, at one point we recently lowered the limit from 10 feet 8 inches to 10 feet, in an effort to maybe get people's attention, but that didn't work. So we think this is going to help.
Hey, it's a good try. It's especially given the way the geometry of a curved surface versus a flat surface. I mean, I understand why that would be useful, especially for a long truck. The longer the truck is going under there, the less you can count on the vertical height at the bridge. It becomes more a matter of the combination of that height and the road contours. So I think that was a smart idea. Still didn't manage to do it, though, right? So
no, not at all. And I drive by the graffiti bridge quite a bit, and I love it. I love that it's a local canvas, but I think this should help us because we really need people to stop trying to basically paint the bridge using the rooftops of their rental trucks, and hopefully this laser system will fix that. So that's the plan.
Okay, I know you said it in jest, but now you've given me a whole new idea for how to accomplish a rapid repaint. Cliff, you did say something briefly, and I just want to follow up because I know how people might hear something. When you say lock down the boat ramp, is there going to be a time where, because of the installation of various parts of this, that there will be boat ramp either reduced or no access for a time during construction of either the boardwalk or any other part of this?
Yeah, right now the plan is for the boat ramp and that parking area to be completely closed. And we'll obviously get out some more information to provide all the specifics of how we plan to do it. But yes, that is That is true.
And do you know a duration, an expectation for how long that? Because listen, the local fishing community hears that, and their antenna are really on alert right now. They're listening to you. That's why I wanted to ask, because I knew they'd care about this. Do we know how long it's planned to be closed?
You know what? I don't have that info right now, and I was reading up everything last night about it, but I will find out and get back with you on that. How about that?
Yeah, sure. Okay, no worries. And do we have a start on that closure date? Is that going to be within September, or is that subsequent?
It's about mid-September. And you know, here's the interesting nuance to this here, because you know how scarce parts are and scarcity is of finding things.
Right.
The company Loftus is basically looking for stuff right now, really to line up everything. So we say mid-September. Mid-September is great, but I mean, at least in my mind, I imagine, man, if they could get the parts they need, maybe get started early, we can get a notification out sooner. And then, you know, just wishful thinking that maybe they could finish this sooner than expected. So that's a wish.
Later and sooner are both options, and we prefer one over the other. We'll take it. Veterans Memorial Park, the bathroom. I know the mayor has been working on this. You know, the foundation's been working on this. Like, everybody's been wanting this for years and years and years. This is part of your domain. What are we looking at right now?
Man, this thing, you just nailed it. A lot of history with this one. I think D.C. came into office. This thing was an issue. And you obviously have had multiple conversations with him, and you know he is constantly driving things, pushing them in the direction of success, and sort of, like he says, do what I told the people I want to do. That's our biggest thing. But yes, we basically now are moving forward, and I look at this sort of as a three-phased approach, and we're going to basically put a permanent climate control, handicap accessible restroom facility in that area. And this is actually going to, at least the next step is going to be pretty quick, because it's going to be August the 13th when it goes to council. I mean, we've been pushing this one hard to get the council. And so once we get council approval, obviously, you know, that's a big deal to get that done. And then once they sign off, fabrication begins. And so the city expects the buildings to be up roughly around 2027, early 2027. And obviously, as it sounds pretty easy, but it's not, because here's the caveat. You know, obviously, we know this is on a federal flood zone. And so the building there, we just can't just simply put a building there, right?
Yeah.
The kicker is the facility has to be specifically, this is weird, it has to be specifically dry flood proof to meet FEMA standards. Now, I think that makes sense, and it's the right thing to do. And so we met all that, we got all that stuff together, and we got a good budget set up for it. So between install and all the other fees, minus ECUA, it's a little over $500,000 to get everything up and running, and we're pretty excited about that.
Just this is a, again, because my nerd brain asks this sort of a question, but if it's going to be flood resistant to FEMA's standards, does that mean that the actual bathroom floor is going to be elevated off of the surface, and does that necessitate rampage or something? Because if we're talking about, you know, ADA access, obviously for, you know, wheelchair bound veterans is the primary target here. Does that create an additional cost or logistical challenge getting, am I thinking about this the right way?
All right, but what the cost I just gave you, that covers basically everything for install.
Okay, that takes care of all of it. Okay.
All of that. That takes care of all of it. Yes, it
okay,
does.
Outstanding. And I know you as a veteran, you know, your eyes on this are going to make sure that it's on in the right direction, make sure that it's right in the end anyway as well.
Super excited.
Gregory Street and 14th, the exit from the 3 Mile Bridge coming into the city, this has been an ongoing problem in, you know, crossing traffic, speed of traffic. We've had a couple of fatalities in that area. You're working on with FDOT to get this improved?
Yeah. You know, have you ever played the game Frogger?
Yeah.
So imagine, and I've done this so many times, sitting at 14, got to make a left turn, and I just see people just flying across, coming up from across the bridge, and I'm like, man, I don't think I'm ever going to make a turn here. But that's what we're dealing with. That's the level of safety we're trying to work. And obviously, when you talk fatalities, that's some serious stuff. So yes, we are working with FDOT to sort of bring this thing to fruition. And I was talking about this yesterday and was like, man, I think help is on the way. This is a good thing for us. So where are we at right now? FDOT basically just finished doing the analysis of the traffic flow, you know, basically to address the real safety issue, because we need those numbers to help us out. And so as you exit the bridge, that is going to be the focus, and we're going to kind of talk about that here in a little bit. But by the end of August, the traffic engineers will use this data basically to complete what they consider to be a formal study. And this is to determine if at the intersection basically needs a stoplight. This is a formality. That's all it is. But while we wait for that to happen, this is another one for you where I like the three-prong approach. FDOT's taking immediate action right now. And what they're going to do is the first one is they're going to fix the lane direction. And so they're going to add extra signs and road markings to clearly show drivers which lane they need to be in to get to I-110 safety, right? The second one is a speed warning. And basically, this is no kidding. They're going to paint 35 miles an hour speed limit sign on the asphalt. And they said, this is going to be big. So you will see this 35 miles per hour. And then the final one, which is a radar sign, which I think people tend to ignore, but they're going to put it up. And it's going to have this digital feedback sign that's going to let people know, slow down, slow down. And that's just the immediate step right now until we get this thing across the finish line.
Well, those are small things, but I think actually putting the speed limit, like any visual clutter for drivers tends to make you drive more cautiously. So interrupting the expectation of driving on an expressway, because, you know, you're coming off a bridge that's built for 70 miles an hour when the speed limit's 45 and nobody drives it, downgrading to 35, changing lanes to get into that right lane to go to I-110. It's a hot mess, okay? It's not a surprise. And then, as you say, people sit at 14th and they're frustrated trying to get onto Gregory. And what they do is, as you know, if you sit longer than about 30 seconds, you start to make more calculations to take a greater risk to get the job done because you're irritated. And all of that combines to unsafety. So, I agree with the visual clutter. I agree with more signage. I agree most people probably ignore it, but a little bit is probably better than nothing. And then long-term solutions, whether that's a light or something else. That's a great, Cliff, great brief, great update on several things that I had questions about. So I appreciate it. Cliff Collins, he is the Associate Pensacola City Administrator. And he overseeing, like I said, economic development, facilities, public works, child center stuff, and other matters. Thank you so much, Captain. I appreciate the time. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right, sir. Thank you. Have a good one.
You too. 7:55 on News Radio 92.3. PJ has traffic on the fives.
Still working that vehicle crash with injuries. I-10 eastbound right near Pensacola Boulevard. They're saying the roadway is blocked. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
Need to move across town, across country, or even across the globe? Trust Lambert Moving Systems. Veteran-owned, military-approved, and now celebrating over 100 years of moving excellence. As a quality award winner, BBB accredited, and agent for North American Van Lines, they handle local, long-distance, industrial, and international moves with packing, storage, and warehousing available. Serving Pensacola to Mobile and all surrounding areas and supporting the Gary Sinise Foundation. Choose the team with a legacy. Lambert Moving Systems. Go LambertTeam.com.
The I-10 Wired TechNet CyberCoast Summit returns October 28th to Pensacola Beach. This is the Southeast's premier cybersecurity and technology conference. Get connected with top experts and explore the cutting-edge trends shaping our future. From AI to robotics to national security and healthcare tech. Discounts available for students, military, and government employees. Don't miss out. Secure your tickets today at itenwired.com.
Join Stephen Schmidt, Marine Service Technology Instructor at Georgetown Technical College for Boat Smart on the Pensacola Expert Panel this Friday at 10 a.m. Key Marine sponsoring the show. Key Marine needs to hire Marine Service technicians. They hire students from Georgetown Technical College. Have a boating question for Stephen? Then give us a call at 437-1620. It's a dream team, so join them this Friday at 10 a.m.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Okay, let's talk about renovation and how it's not like your ordinary happy ending home makeover show. Example, there are the guys who prey on homeowners and never show up to do the work. So that's why the state of Florida licenses contractors. You can check if your contractor is licensed at the Florida Department of Business and Professional Regulation website at myfloridalicense.com.
This message is sponsored by the Florida Department of Business and Professional Regulation, the Florida Association of Broadcasters, and this station.
You don't need another money hack. You need a plan. Dave Ramsey, weeknights at 7 on News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
TX is designed to terminate other cybernetic organisms.
So, she's an anti-Terminator. Terminator? You have got to be kidding me.
No, I am not kidding you.
Now you be like, gang, 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 gang.
Howdy, howdy.
Good morning, 7:58 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines this morning. David?
Yeah, Dr. Anthony Fauci will be back in the spotlight today because of a diary he kept during the pandemic. He'll be testifying before a GOP-led Senate panel after Rand Paul released the diary. Former President Biden had preemptively pardoned Fauci. The U.S. and Saudi Arabia have launched some airstrikes on Iranian-backed groups in Iraq. Those attacks were carried out yesterday after Iran launched ballistic missiles at U.S. forces in the Middle East. All of those missiles that Iran launched were intercepted. And Minnesota officials say more than 30 water systems across their state have been targeted in a cyber attack. Those attacks happened Sunday and Monday. Officials say there have been no requests for residents to change their drinking water use.
All right, David, thank you so much for the update. Have you seen the story about the eBay harassment settlement?
No. And
there was an online blog of some kind. A Massachusetts couple had written some mean things about eBay. eBay employees over the course of years were sending them hate packages or like sending porn addressed to the guy to the neighbors, sending like live insects to goat mask, all kinds of like harassing them to no end. The guy who was, I think, the president of eBay at the time got judged for $2 million, and it was like a $50 million judgment against eBay for this, which they have apologized for, admitted to. But the employees were harassing these critics with weird shipping.
92.3, 95.3, and AM.